avoid rising energy prices and get a smarter home energy solution with B-Solar. Visit B.Solar and GLG Green Life Group, leaders in property services and open space management at glgcorp.com. The First Serve, your home of tennis.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome along to The First Serve. It is your home of tennis. Great always to be back on a Monday night. Brett Phillips in the chair. We turn the page into week two of Roland Garros. We're about to get to Courtney Walsh. Mark Woodford also set to join us from Roland Garros tonight. We're also going to head up to the heart of Australia. So from Paris to Alice Springs, we're going to cover some ground tonight on The First Serve. But your calls are always welcome. 1-300-736-736 or your text 0433 98 11 16. Thanks to Tennis Direct, Australia's favourite online tennis store. Fast delivery, great prices, free delivery on orders over $150. You can shop to your heart's content tonight. TennisDirect.com.au. Get that nice little 10% discount store-wide for all our SEN listeners. All the goodies, wherever you are around Australia, will be delivered to your front door. Just use that little promo code FIRSTSERVE10. So it's a packed B-Solar menu tonight. Courtney Walsh, Mark Woodford, live from Roland Garros, where the sun is out on a big Monday for the continuation of the fourth round. And I thought, just on the back of, obviously, in the AFL, we've had Sir Doug Nicholls round, Indigenous round the last 2 weeks. I thought we'd go to the heart of Australia tonight and check in on the tennis landscape at the Alice Springs Tennis Centre. I've done a lot of footy up at Traeger Park, the beautiful oasis in the desert, and right next door is a magnificent 10-court floodlit tennis facility. So Grant O'Callaghan, who's had a fair journey in tennis, will join us a little bit later on. But let's get across to our first stop at Roland Garros tonight. Award-winning tennis journalist. He's been writing some great stuff for us over the past week at thefirstserve.com.au and wearing a number of hats over there in Paris. Courtney Walsh, great to have you once again off the top of the show. Walshie.
Absolute pleasure to be with you, Brett. And you touched on Grant O'Callaghan there. I've played a bit of tennis with him during my career.
Indeed. I actually ran that past him and he said, Walshie, yeah, he's a star. He's an absolute star. He's got every shot in the book. And I saw it for myself in paddle tennis, Walshie. You absolutely blitzed all of us a couple of weeks ago. So nice little early pump up for you. Hey, the sun's out. Camilla Georgie's out here as well. I see they've sorted out the little sponsor logo. There's nothing. She's gone from having a huge sponsor logo to nothing, but she's dropped the first set to Kasatkina. I think Kudermetova and Keys are about to get underway. Gee, we've got a big day, haven't we? The one I'm looking forward to is Tsitsipas and Rune. We've got Ruud and Hurkacz. Iga Swiatek looking to make it 32 wins in a row. Jessica Pegula, who is putting herself in the frame, second week at majors. Medvedev, Cilic, Rublev and Sinner promises to be a beauty as well. So a lot to look forward to.
Yeah, look, it's a remarkable day. You know, both today, I mean, tomorrow is clearly the one that will be spectacular play. But today, you know, there's lots of great action in, and we've already underway, as you said, with Kasatkina versus Georgie. The Russian has started particularly well. She's moved through the draw really efficiently. We're seeing her back to the type of player she was a few years ago when she pushed into the top 10. Mm. She's played superbly all the way through, so that's a great start. Some of the other matches today I'm really looking forward to. Obviously, the world number one, Swiatek versus Zhang. The young Chinese player, the teenager, is a rising sensation, and I've loved the way she's gone about this tournament. To see her, how heavy she hit the ball against Simona Halep a couple of days ago was impressive. And then she didn't drop a game against Elise Cornet before Cornet, you know, ended up retiring midway through that set. So very impressive. It'll be fascinating to see how she goes against the world number one. She certainly hits the type of shot, I think, that that can trouble the world number one. And then you've got, you know, the Daniil Medvedev, who we thought realistically doesn't necessarily like playing on clay, never really has, but he has had some success in Paris and other tournaments. And here he is through to a quarterfinal playing against Marin Cilic tonight. It's, you know, he's certainly a chance to push deep in the tournament. So lots of action on today. And then obviously tomorrow, it's just it's going to be a dream schedule. It'll be fascinating to see which way they go, Brett, whether they'll play Nadal Djokovic at night or whether they'll make Alcaraz play for the third time at night, or do they throw up the wild card and play a women's match at night? Mm. Coco Gauff versus Sloane Stephens. So I'm really intrigued to see how that pans out as well.
Absolutely. We'll hear a little bit of Novak and Rafa throughout the hour, particularly Novak speaking about the scheduling. Alex, you're on fire on the text. You've sent me five texts in the space of 30 seconds. So nice work by you. All Aussies are out, BP. Well, not totally. We've got Matty Ebden and Sam Stoser, quarterfinals of the mixed doubles. We've got a couple in the juniors. Taylor Preston, I'm really impressed with this 16-year-old who is going around again today. We've got, of course, some action in the boys' singles coming up as well. We'll give you the Aussie report card in just a moment with Walshy. But what do you think the FFT, Emily Mauresmo and co? We know here at the Australian Open, the scheduling meeting is always of great interest. Walshy, with all the international broadcasters, everyone wanting their slice of the pie, and when matches are scheduled, what do you think they're going to do with Djokovic and Nadal?
Well, it's an interesting one because basically you've got the French TV, which screens matches, you know, for free during the day versus the pay TV offering of Amazon Prime. At night now, you know, Jeff Bezos and his company have thrown in a hell of a lot of money to be able to have those night matches, and that's a pay-per-view type scenario. So effectively, the audience on the free TV will be about 10 times to that of the one, but then you balance it out and say, well, you know, I think we'd love more people to watch Djokovic Nadal, and it would be so well viewed, I think, around France, particularly on free TV. For Australians, it's probably not ideal to have it right in the middle of the night. I think if it's an 8:45, there's some chance people get up about 5 o'clock in the morning and watch, or six o'clock in the morning and watch. So the night session might be a little better for Australians. I am intrigued because we know how much money and how much they've invested into the night sessions, but it's a difference to Australia where there's two matches in. You know, over here, just the one session for the people buying the tickets into that match at night. So, and it's an 8:45 p.m. start. It's quite late by the time they get onto the court. And, well, if those two go the distance, they're not getting out till 1 o'clock, half past one, 2 o'clock in the morning, which means you miss the the metros, etc., to get home. So, yeah, a bit to weigh up. Look, personally, I think a nighttime spectacular would be awesome, but I guess we see how it unfolds.
The other intrigue to all this is what sort of match we're going to get, Walshy. So Djokovic looks magnificent. Now, apart from Diego making a little run in the second set, he had him covered yesterday. He hasn't dropped a set. He's won 9 matches in a row, if you include Rome. He's been building and building and building, a semi-Madrid final in Belgrade after having no tennis. He looks fresh. He's got the glint in his eye for mine. Then you've got Rafa, who, what, for the third time in history at the French, gets stretched to 5, quite extraordinary against Felix Auger-Aliassime, who I'm a massive fan of, who certainly had his chances to win that match. Nadal, you know, the greatest warrior the sport has seen, just pulls out all stops, even the pain that he's in. You listen to him in press, Rafa, and he talks about the fact that, you know, he treats every match like his last. I mean, this body has been holding on. It's taken an absolute battering, and the fact he's still playing and still going to the levels that he is going to, about to turn 36, is quite extraordinary. But do you sense there's some self-doubt, a little bit of self-doubt in the Nadal mind? I'm just curious to see what sort of match we're going to get here, because generally across time, these matches have been unbelievable, apart from what an Australian Open final that came and went in an hour and a half on a hard court where obviously Djokovic has dominated Nadal in more recent times. But what do you think we're going to get?
Look, I'm intrigued as well. Last year Novak beat him in 4 sets in that semi-final, but it was such an epic semi-final. Yep. He's beaten him twice in Paris, so he's clearly capable of doing it. And the form with which he's playing, he's striking the ball remarkably. To see him rebound like he has, it was interesting to hear Goran Ivanišević, his coach, speaking earlier in the week when he said that 90% of the players wouldn't have bounced back from what Novak went through that in Melbourne when he was detained, obviously all the way through that period and the stress and the situation that unfolded afterwards. My word, he's rebounded against Schwartzman yesterday. He was pressured early in the second set, but other than that, he was largely dominant. Mm. And we know Schwartzman's a quality conveyance on clay, very, very, very good player. Admittedly, he hasn't beaten Novak before, but we know that he's tested the very best other than that. Nadal, to go 5 sets like he did 2 days before coming up against Novak. In one regard, I think that's a bit of a concern. And he was really tested yesterday. That was as well as I've seen Félix Auger-Aliassime play. I think he balanced his composure really well. Even when he was down 2-1, he was able to sort of come back into the match. He played with greater, I think, flair, great pop,
yep,
great serve. He did exceptionally well there. So there's, you know, to be able to come through against Félix, I thought was really good. So then you look at how it goes and you think, well, Félix took it right up to Rafa by making massive serves and then following up, getting the ball early and thumping forehands, thumping backhands. Really, really impressive performance. Can Novak have the same 1-2 punch? You know, the serve is not as big as Félix, so he won't get as many easy second shots. So I think it's a different type of match. So that, you know, as much as Rafa was tested yesterday, I do think it's a different match when he comes up against Novak, and I think he's able to get his teeth more into it. I don't know which way it'll go, but it's certainly going to be fascinating to watch.
Yeah, it's enthralling. 59th meeting. We never get sick of these two going head-to-head. Courtney Walsh is on the ground in Paris. Award-winning tennis journalist to kick us off on the first serve tonight. We're a week down. We turn the page into the second week. Aaron's just come through on the Tennis Direct text, BP Georgie. When she serves at the top of the TV screen, she throws the ball toss so high, it departs the screen, hit or miss, no in-between. Well, that sort of sums up Camilla Georgie, doesn't it, Walshy? I mean, there's no subtlety. She plays with all-out firepower. Everything's helter-skelter, trying to belt the living suitcase out of their ball. And poor Serge, the cameraman... her father, of course. The cameraman must love going to Serge because he can't look half the time.
Yeah, no, absolutely right. And I guess 2 days ago, she comes up against Aryna Sabalenka, who we know plays with great power, but perhaps not a lot of subtlety. And she relished the pace that the Belarusian was giving her.
Yep.
You know, to see her just thump winner after winner after winner and a reel off, you know, a one in love victory in the last two sets. She did drop the first set, but just the manner with which she played, you thought, she is a world beater. Is this someone who, if she somehow managed to hold it together for 7 matches in a row, could she be the one that might derail Swiatek, the world number one? But when she comes up against a cannier player like Kazatskina, someone who can change the pace, someone who alters the trajectory, you know, a lot of high spinning balls, a lot of clever drop shots,
yep,
able to find acute angles, she can throw off rhythm. We saw Ash Barty do the same. She played her a couple of times where Georgie would come out and thump winners, but Ash would then alter the trajectory slightly, change the pace, throw her different balls, and it was enough to actually make her start missing. And when she starts missing, the errors can come just as rapidly as the winners when she's on fire.
No doubt. She's in a bit of strife now, no. 6-2, 3-1 down. Walshy, before I let you go, let's give an Aussie report card since we caught up 7 days ago. So Jason Kubler gets through to the second round on the male side. Duckworth, Demonor, Popperin, Thompson, Kokkinakis, O'Connell out early. The run of Dasher through to the fourth round, ranking now back just outside the top 100, but from where she was at the start of the year, she has genuinely made up some ground. And Ayla Tomljanović, it sort of has summed up the career of Ayla. She beats the world number 5, then loses to the world number 71. Every time she sort of takes a step forward genuinely, she goes back a couple of steps, and that's why I suppose her ranking has hovered, you know, between 30 and 60 for a big part of her career.
Yeah, look, no doubt about that. I mean, she played superbly in the first round against Kontaveit and showed some great composure late in the match. To see her bow out, unfortunately, you know, she was in action again in doubles yesterday, but you would have hoped she'd be able to get through that, push closer towards the top 20. You know, this is why she's ranked in the 30s to 40s. She, as you said, she's able to string together a really good win and then not quite follow up the next time around. Clearly working exceptionally hard to try and change that. And we know that different matchups pose different challenges, but
yep,
I suspect she's left disappointed in that regard. I thought Dasha was really good. She was disappointed, certainly, after she lost to Trevisan in the third round. But you look at Trevisan's form last week, you look at the fact that she then followed up with a really good win again yesterday over Sasnovich. And you think that's not a bad effort from Dasha in her first, I think, proper Grand Slam since she's been fully fit, because, you know, she enters with some conviction. She's able to prepare properly, knowing she's going to have a chance at playing. And I thought she was very good. And look, I think Sam Stosur, we had a chat to her last week, and she has no doubt that she can push back towards about the top 20, the top 30 where she was beforehand. I think we'll see her make a run to the second week at some stage in the next couple of years if she remains fit. And let's hope that that's the case. Jason Kubler was a lovely story. Great to see him have a win. And I thought he played okay again in his second round match. But again, similar type of story. If he can stay fit, there's no doubt he's a top 100 player. It's just a matter of staying fit. Mm. He's just had such misfortune. So, he must have crossed a black cat in a laneway or walked under a ladder. It's such an unfortunate run with injury. I guess we've looked to a couple of the others. Look, Alex Dimonhall, clearly that was a frustrating one for him and an opportunity that went begging.
Yep.
Very difficult when you play someone from France, and particularly someone like Gaston, who is wildly talented, but also similarly wildly inconsistent, can be red hot and then ice cold. And we saw all of that in that match. I thought Dimonhall in the lead up to the French Open, I thought his form was actually quite strong on clay. So it gives me some encouragement that even though he had a loss, in that match tiebreaker in the fifth set, that he may have taken a step forward. Clearly, he would have relished had he got through that. I think he would have made it through to the third round at the very least. So, one that goes begging. Look, Alexei Popperin is probably the other one where you look and go, where is he at? And he was saying the same thing after his first round exit to Fabio Fognini. He was very disappointed. He thinks the last 6 months have been difficult, but he thinks there's some positive signs. He obviously won a challenger last week in France before the French Open began.
Mm.
He gets to the grass and the hard courts where I think he has some weapons that can enable him to push forward back into the top 100. But we asked him whether or not, he won the French Open boys singles 5 years ago. Where does he think he's at? Does he think his career's gone forward? Does he think it's panned out like he expected it would? Because we know that he's had, reached third rounds of Grand Slams and shown generally some good form there, but struggled more on the ATP tour, struggled for the consistency. And he said he doesn't think he's as far progressed as what he thought, but he's learned a lot of lessons and he's hopeful of being able to push forward in the next year or two.
Yep. He's on the grass, of course, over in Subiton tonight, I think about 11 p.m. So we'll get a look at Alexei on the grass. Walshy, always great to get your insights. Enjoy week two. Going to be some great storylines unfolding. Winning a major, there's four opportunities in any year, and this is what you play tennis for. So we'll see how it looks down the business stretch of this tournament. Thanks for joining us.
Absolute pleasure, and I'll look forward to being in touch again in the next few weeks.
Good man. Courtney Walsh, writing a lot of great material from Paris. Also jumping on Roland Garros Radio, if you don't mind, over there. I'll have to tune in a little bit later on. It's certainly getting away from Camilla Giorgi now, 6-2, 4-1. So it looks like Daria Kesakina is going to get through to the quarterfinals. Walshy here, thanks to AATC, Australasian Academy of Tennis Coaches, providing quality coach education across the globe. Courses delivered by industry leaders and tennis business owners, so you can learn locally, coach globally, internationally endorsed. Inquire and enrol at AATC.tennis. Back with more of the First Serve.
Install a 6.6 kilowatt solar system plus battery from just $25 a week at B-Solar. Visit B.Solar and GLG Greenlife Group, leaders in property services and open space management at glgcorp.com. The First Serve, your home of tennis.
Always here on a Monday night. Great to have your company. Matt on the text, and I'll just answer this one, Matt. Why do we have a tennis show on SEN? I find tennis a snooze fest. Well, I suppose, Matt, I say, why do we have a horse racing show? Why do we have a motorsport show? Why do we have a football soccer show? What other sports do we cover with specified shows here on SEN? At last check, I think the Sports Entertainment Network is a 24-hour sports radio network. So there's the opportunity to cover a whole range of sports. But I do appreciate that maybe not everyone is into tennis. But if you're not, you can just switch off for an hour every week. And if you're only into footy, that's fine. There's plenty of footy talk on SEN. I love my footy as much as anyone. So, yeah, we have a tennis show because it's a mainstream sport. We cover tennis, golf. I mean, that's what we are. We're a sports radio network. It's a pretty simple answer to that one, but I take no offence. That's okay. Now, let's take a look at the matches coming up over the next few hours. The one I'm really looking forward to is Tsitsipas and Holger Rune. So all the media's been with Carlos Alcaraz. He's only a few days older or younger, I'm just trying to think, with Holger. He's got no media. He's just gone through this draw low profile. He's been building, former world number one junior, won his first title on the clay in Munich back a few weeks ago. He's almost now, I think, inside the top 30 in the live rankings at 31 last check. I think there's an upset potentially brewing against Tsitsipas. So we're going to get a look at that in the next few hours. Iga Swiatek, who's going to stop Iga? Her numbers are just quite extraordinary. Certainly pushed by Kovanic, a couple of tighter sets on the weekend. Probably the sort of match that Iga certainly needed. But I think turning the page into the second week, she'll see the finishing line as the only seed left in the top 10. But as I mentioned to Walshy about Djokovic and Nadal, and a decision over the next few hours as to when that match will be scheduled, we might have a listen to Novak Djokovic, who was asked about the scheduling and then going on to talk about playing Nadal again.
Those requests are not always accepted. So tournament director, along with TV broadcasters, are basically, I think in the end of the day that... That's who decides, you know, TV, whether they want your match day or night. So you just have to adjust to that. And obviously, depending on who you play, sometimes it's favorable to play night, sometimes day. So it's, yeah, it's really, there's no standard, there's no formula that works always, so to say. Even though I historically played very well and won a lot of matches under the lights on different slams, particularly in Australia.
In a similar theme, I just wondered how you felt about being scheduled on Longland today. Obviously, the second time this tournament, and it can be a bit more wild over there than on Châtrier sometimes.
I mean, I was okay playing during the day. Honestly, today I would rather play day than playing 9 p.m. Conditions are different today. It's colder, slower. At night, probably even slower. And even lower bounce, which would be probably favorable more to my opponent. So I was okay. Nadal, obviously, well anticipated match. I think when the draw came out for a lot of people, I'm glad that I, you know, didn't spend too much time on the court myself up to quarterfinals, knowing that, you know, playing him in Roland Garros is always a physical battle along with everything else that happens, and it's a huge challenge and probably the biggest one that you can have here in Roland Garros. So I'm ready for it. I like the way I've been feeling, the way I've been hitting the ball. I'll focus on what I need to do, and I like my chances.
The thoughts of the world number one Novak Djokovic. We'll hear from Rafael Nadal shortly, but he's only taken 27 minutes this week. A little slow out of the blocks. Harry from Belmore, welcome.
Hello, Brett. I am watching Kazatinka and Giorgio. It's nearly all over.
Yeah, give us your analysis. How have you seen it, Harry?
Oh, very good. But listen, you mentioned Mark Woodford. In the Aussie Open, Mark Philippoussis beat Sampras in the first round. And Mark beat Mark Woodford beat Philippoussis in the second round. Mm. He was very good. Then the following year, Mark had to play Sampras in the first round.
Yep.
And hardly won a point. He went to the crowd egging them on when he won a point.
Yes. He's coming up soon, Mark. Who's going to win the tournament, Harry, on the men's and the women's? Give me a couple
Novak.
Of tips.
Novak.
Yeah. What about the women's?
Oh, I don't know about the women. I haven't seen much of them,
yeah.
Brett.
Yeah, that's okay.
But,
hey, Harry, can
yes?
I ask you a question? Now, you're up there in Belmore. What's your? I don't mean to invade, Harry, a little personal question, but what's your living arrangements up there in Belmore? Are you a solo man? Are you married?
No. Oh, well, I can't tell you about my women because I've shacked up three times. I love them and leave them, mate. When you get sick of them. I was living with one at Camden.
Right.
And we had a blue, and I was keeping a unit here in Lakemba. And I just packed my bags and caught a taxi back, and the taxi fare was $100.
Like a bolt of light, you're out of there. Out of there, Harry.
Yeah, but we had a news agency in Kings Grove, and when that sold out, I moved to Punchbowl.
Right.
And then after Punchbowl, Arncliffe.
Okay.
And well, near the airport.
Fantastic. Nice to. We could do it. This is your life, one edition, Harry. Maybe I'll bring the show up to Belmore one week and we can pick apart your life, your thoughts on tennis, because I love having you on the show every week. You're a character. You take us down memory lane. You relive moments. And I've just found out that, three. You've bitten the dust three times. That's unbelievable.
We had to play sport and work at the same time.
Beautiful.
I worked for Hudson Parker, the big shipping company. Okay. I had to order all the food in for the Wonganella and Westralia. And the chief steward and I, we had to work out how much each meal cost.
Right.
For
unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Head office in Melbourne, they were in Collins Street.
Mm.
They wanted that. I thought it was a waste of time.
Yeah.
But still, head office. When they finished, they gave me 12 months' wages and only my share of the super.
Harry, I'll tell you what, we might need to come back for part two because we mightn't get any other tennis content in, but I'm genuinely interested. I love our listeners out there. They come from far and wide all over Australia. But, hey, have a great night. To be continued.
Thank you, Brett. Thanks very much for listening to me.
Thank you, Harry. Harry from Belmore loves tennis. Michael says, Harry, legend, can listen to him for hours off the Tennis Direct text. Daria Kasatkina is through, 2-2 over Camilla Giorgi. No one walks off the court quicker in tennis than Camilla Giorgi. I tried to get her for an interview at the Sydney International about 3 or 4 years ago when she actually won, and she had to be brought back by the director on court, and she said to me, just one question I asked her for. She doesn't like talking to the media. Can't stand the media. One man is very good with the media. I don't know how many media conferences he's done, Rafael Nadal. It's got to be a lot. Speaking to, after every match he plays, he's played a lot. But let's listen to Rafa after his 5-set epic against Felix Auger-Aliassime, and now looking ahead to a 59th meeting with Novak Djokovic.
Well, I don't know 100% because I don't have a close test against him, because my last match against him was, I think, last year here. I didn't play this kind of matches for the last 3 months. It's going to be a big challenge for me. Of course, he already won, I think, the last 9 matches in a row, winning in Rome and now winning here in straight sets every match. Probably he will be confident. I know how is my situation and I accept it. Well, I'm going to fight for it. No, that's it. I can't complain much. I am in quarterfinals of Roland Garros 2.5 weeks ago, even if I had a good hopes after the positive hopes after Rome. I even don't know if I will be able to be here. So just enjoying the fact that I am here for one more year. Being honest, every match that I play here, I don't know if it's going to be my last match here in Roland Garros in my tennis career. No, that's my situation now. Of course, I went through a tough process again with my foot. So I don't know what can happen in the near future with my career, but that's why I am just trying to enjoy as much as possible and fight as much as I can to keep living the dream, that is keep playing tennis and be back in a very advanced round of Roland Garros playing against the world number one. Let's see. I hope to be able to give myself a chance to play at the highest level possible, and then let's see.
That's what we can hope as fans who love this rivalry. We hope these two are as cherry ripe as it gets. And they're another year older, 35 Novak, soon to turn 36 Rafael Nadal, 30-28 the head-to-head for Djokovic. Looks a little bit better on paper for Nadal, certainly in Paris. Now, I wanted to mention, just away from Paris, as we cover all spectrums of the tennis world on our show, a couple of wins by two Aussies over the weekend on the ITF Tour. Akira Santillan was a wild card. If anyone knows about the Santillan story, he's played under the Australian banner, he's played under the Japanese banner with his family heritage. He got to 144 in the world. I remember I first saw him at Melbourne Park at the wild card playoff. We're going back some time now. And he had a beautiful single-handed backhand. And you thought, this kid's got a lot of talent. So he got to 144 and then just lost his way. But over the weekend, he won his first tour title since 2017. So he's won 7 at ITF level, 1 at ATP Challenger level. He won the 25K in Tunisia. He's won his 11 of his last 13 matches. So he's back up 107 spots to 389 live. I really hope he can get on a roll. He's a good talent. And on our social media account last night, we got a word from the laid-back Akira Santillan.
Aki, congrats on the win. Do you want to tell us a bit about your match today?
Thank you. Yeah, it was a tough match at the start, but I got a little lucky throughout the match and then caught fire with my forehands and, yeah, ended the way I wanted to end.
Good stuff. What does this title mean for you?
It means a lot, actually. It's my first pro title in about 5 years, so it's been a long grind, but, yeah, I was really, really happy to take this home with me.
Good stuff. Good luck for the rest of the year.
Thanks.
Just kicking back in Tunisia. There's a lot of tournaments in that part of the world, as there are in Turkey and other parts, where basically players can lob for a good sort of 10 to 12 weeks and play the 15Ks or the 25Ks, resort-style accommodation there. So keen to track Akira Santillan. Priscilla Hon won the ITF 25K in Israel. She defeated the former, almost forgotten about, former world number 12. That was back in 2010. Janina Wickmeyer, who's given birth the last couple of years. Her ranking had certainly slipped. Made a semi-final of the US Open back in 2009. But Priscilla, 6-1, 6-3. We know she's been as high as 118, had some bad injuries the last couple of years. She's back now inside the top 200 and just gave us a little brief account of her win.
I'm really happy with my win this week in Israel. I've had a really great week here, loved the city, and hopefully I can keep building from here.
Thank you very much, Priscilla. Short and succinct. Louis is on the line in Burwood, who wants to talk a bit of Rafa and also Novak. Looks like he's just dropped out. We'll see if we can get him back. Louis, give us a call, 1-300-736-736, or on the text 0433-981116. We might slip in a break. Mark Woodford is going to join us very soon from Roland Garros. And as I mentioned, we'll head up to Alice Springs out of 9 o'clock, extended edition through to 9.30 tonight, and catch up with head coach Grant O'Callaghan. All thanks to Hume Tennis and Community Centre. It's a mini Melbourne park in Melbourne's north. It's got tennis for everyone. Perfect also for coaches and players. If you're coming from interstate to train and compete, close to Melbourne Airport, accommodation available. You can find out more at HumeTennis.com.au. We might squeeze in the break. We'll come back to Louis. Mark Woodford next.
Let the sun pay for your electricity with a 6.6 kilowatt solar system from B Solar. Visit B.Solar and GLG Green Life Group, leaders in property services and open space management at glgcorp.com. The first serve, your home of tennis.
Welcome back. Great to have your company on this Monday night, week two of Roland Garros. The sun is out in Paris. Some great action to come. Daria Kasatkina through comfortably in straight sets over Camilla Giorgi, 6-2, 6-2. So she's into the quarters. Madison Keys, another big ball striker on the tour, has made a lightning start up against Veronika Kudermetova. 6-1 in the opening set. Rune and Tsitsipas not too far away. Casper Ruud and Hubert Hurkacz just about to start on court. Suzanne Longlin. Louis in Burwood has been good enough to give us a call. Louis, great to have you on the show.
How you going, Brett?
Very well, thank you. What do you got for us?
Oh, mate, I think this is the match of the year, mate. Nadal and Djokovic in the quarters. Should be actually a final, but yeah.
Yeah, well, because of where Rafa's ranked, obviously, it's come a little earlier than probably we all would have liked, but I don't mind it so much because it also gives an opportunity for some others to make their mark. And if we look at that other side of the draw, you know, there's Medvedev and Tsitsipas, Casper Ruud, Hurkacz. It gives a chance for that other side of the draw to make a Grand Slam final. And then there's Alcaraz is doing incredible things. I mean, the level he's playing at is just mind-blowing. And no doubt he could beat either Djokovic or Nadal if he gets past Zverev. But this is a big game for Zverev as well. He needs to stand up and lift, Louis. But, yeah, have you got a Djokovic-Nadal match, Louis, that stands out in your mind?
Oh, undoubtedly, Brett, mate. The old Australian Open, when was it, 2015?
Are you talking about the nearly six-hour affair? That was about 2012, I think that was. Was it 5 hours 53, I think it was, on the clock?
Yeah. That's right, Brett.
Last man standing. Good on you, Louis. Appreciate the call.
The old the old two war horses, mate. Yeah.
Indeed, the war horses. Thank you, Louis. Thank you very much for your contribution on the first serve tonight. You sound a little weary, Louis. You might have had some late nights taking in the tennis, as we all are. I mean, I'm living on a pure adrenaline. Let me tell you, across this fortnight, it is pure adrenaline. Mark Woodford coming up in just a tick. We are going to talk to Mark. And as I said, we'll go to Alice Springs just after 9 o'clock and touch in with the Red Centre around, of course, a great time in AFL, you know, celebrating Sir Doug Nicholls around in Indigenous culture. But one of Australia's finest tennis players, what a legend. One half of the Woodies, done some extraordinary things across his career, a great singles career as well, and terrific commentator on the ITF board, wearing many hats. It was great to catch up with Mark in Indian Wells going back, a couple of months ago now. And he was in my ear last night as I sat on the desk at 9 watching Nadal and Felix go head-to-head in that 5-setter. Great commentary with Pete Hodges. And Mark Woodford's been good enough to join us from Paris. Mark, great to have you on the show.
Good to hear from you, Brett. Nice to be here all the way from Paris.
Indeed, you've had some big matches, haven't you? You've drawn a few five setters, a few grueling campaigns in the commentary box.
Yeah, it certainly have. The first week here, usually for the world feed, is jam packed with plenty of matches, and as quite often it turns out, you know, five set encounters. There have been some amazing level of tournament, but it's just nice to be here at Roland Garros with a full crowd again.
Yeah, indeed. There is something about the Parisian crowd, isn't there, Mark? I mean, each Grand Slam has got that distinct difference in atmosphere, and you can feel that as soon as you walk through the gates and you sit in the stands at either of the four Grand Slams. But how would you describe the Parisian crowd that come along?
Yeah, it is unique. You're so right. I know that you've been here many times over the last few years, but you know that's what has been missing. Just the crowd involvement, the presence. Obviously, through the COVID years, they've had restricted crowds, but also they haven't had a whole lot of French contingent on the men's side or the women's side to really cheer about, and that's what they're just so passionate. The fans, the French fans, and in particular here in Paris, they love their tennis players. They're revered, and that's what I've noticed the major difference this year.
Yep.
That the crowd being back there, here at near capacity. Last night's crowd for the match was quite amazing, even though Alcaraz blitzed his opponent in three straight sets. But they love their tennis, and they've had to say farewell to a couple of male players. Joe Songer and Gilles Simon had announced that this would be their last Roland Garros, and boy, did the French come out and support them. But it's the way that they get involved at the end of these points that just lift everyone else to their feet. They love doing the Mexican wave that goes around. They're not shy about that, but boy, when they haven't had to use the roof here too many times, but when the roof has been closed and the French have been very supportive, it almost lifts the Chatrier roof off a couple of feet.
No, I'm hearing you. I mean, and the thing is, Mark, it's interesting with fans, isn't it? We'll never maybe get to the bottom of this is right around the world. Why fans boo at certain times? We sort of sit there and go, what would they be booing? I mean, sometimes champions get booed, which is just ridiculous in my mind. So there's a little bit of that at times, but that's not Paris alone. That's around the world in sport, isn't it? That people they barrack in an interesting way that sometimes you sort of scratch your head.
Yes, they are unique to the line calls. I mean, this is I think what stands out to the uniqueness of Roland Garros is because it's at the clay court, and so when there is a close line call, the players are quite often going up and they're circling a mark. Now you will have some players that might not necessarily circle the correct mark, and I would think even the fan that maybe is in the top row that is far away from the court, they have the best set of eyes, because that's when the whistles start to occur and, yeah, and the booing. Yeah. But yeah, it is just part of the magical side of Roland Garros.
No doubt. We turn the page into the second week. We get another instalment of Djokovic and Nadal. I had Courtney Walsh on a little earlier, just giving us, I suppose, his take. And you called them the Nadal match. You watched Djokovic closely. What sort of match mark do you think we're going to get? And being a little closer, being around TV, I don't know if you've got any intel. I'm not asking you to reveal or go somewhere where you shouldn't. But obviously the scheduling decision is a fascinating one that is going to come out, what, over the next few hours as to when that match is going to be played.
Yeah, there was a lot of speculation yesterday as to, you know, how the players. Djokovic was, he was out, the number one ranked player in the world. He was out on Longlen. That was the second consecutive match that he played out there. Rafa chose to play during the day yesterday. He has made, he's been quite open, just making statements that he obviously prefers to play during the day because it's much warmer. It's been a relatively cool Roland Garros this year. And in the evening sessions in particular, the court has played quite heavy. Now, that's not the prime conditions for Rafa to be playing in. And so what was floating around yesterday was that, you know, possibly this was a bit of a trade-off that Novak elected to play Schwartzman over on Longlen. And Rafa to play during the day yesterday so that Djokovic maybe his preference is to play against Rafa on Tuesday evening here in the late match, which, you know, might be more suitable for him. But of course, the French Federation, they'll have their input as well because they want to, have that particular match, which is the bumper match. So, I mean, this is what everyone's been waiting for since the draw came out. So, I look, and you put that aside, you know, the way that the players have been going about their tennis in the first week, I do believe Djokovic has been more polished.
Install a 6.6 kilowatt solar system plus battery from just $25 a week at B-Solar. Visit B.Solar and GLG Greenlife Group, leaders in property services and open space management at glgcorp.com. The First Serve, your home of tennis.
Welcome back to the show. A little extra half hour during the Grand Slam, so we're through till 9:30. Apologies for those just inquiring on the SMS about cutting off Mark Woodford there. Totally out of my control, so I'm not sure what has transpired. But we'll get Mark back on the show, no doubt, over the next few weeks. Always a man we can go to at any time. Love his commentary with us during the Australian Open, one half of the Woodies. I'm lucky to do some work with Mark and with Todd, two terrific fellas who achieved great success, obviously, during their careers. So just a reminder, too, outside of our Monday night show, all the great podcast content you can listen to at the First Serve. Aussies only, Nathan Healy coming up this week, who played, coached Leighton Hewitt at the back part of his career, has been coaching Max Purcell recently, crunching the numbers, Play USA, another addition if you're looking at or keen on knowing how the Aussies are going in college tennis over in the States. What are you doing here with Rowan Williams, who's caught up with Brad Stein? More of that to come, and The Grind as well. We'll have another edition as we chat to the head of the ATP Challenger Tour over the next week or two. So you can subscribe to The First Serve via your preferred podcast platform or head to the podcast section at thefirstserve.com.au. We've been to Paris tonight, and I wanted to head up to the heart of Australia because tennis obviously is played right across this great country. And, you know, doing the footy also here at SEN, I think like all the commentators, we love being part of Sir Doug Nicholls Round, which is stretched over a couple of weeks, celebrating the great Indigenous culture. And Alice Springs is a place that's close to my heart. Did a lot of correspondence radio to a couple of great stations in Alice. Many trips up to Alice to call the footy from pre-season games to the season proper. And Traeger Park, which is one of the most spectacular grounds, is right next door to the Alice Springs Tennis Centre. 10 hard courts, floodlit, and there's a big community who certainly love their tennis. And it's great to welcome to the show tonight Grant O'Callaghan, who's the head tennis operator, head coach. Grant said a long time in the game, coaching from Victoria, who answered the call to go up to the Red Centre. Grant, it's great to have you on the show.
Yeah, g'day, Brett. How are you going, mate?
Going very well. You at the club as we speak, or you've ducked home?
Yes. We've just finished a fast four night here tonight. Six courts, adults playing on all six. Hopefully that's still going well. So 24 people playing tennis on a Monday night, which is good. I think it's about 15 or 16 degrees still up here, mate, so it's still quite warm.
Yes, always a nice part of the Red Centre. It can be quite mild compared to what I think the coldest day we've had here in Melbourne this year. Grant, you've had so much coaching experience. We touched base last year and have kept some contact. And this has been a very different voyage for you, hasn't it, to go up to the heart of Australia and experience the tennis landscape. Take us inside what tennis is like in the middle of Australia.
Oh, well, it's not bad. There's a lot of kids up here that enjoy the game. Obviously, there's a lot of sports that are still available up here in Alice Springs. We tend to still be full nearly 7 days a week with kids and adults playing. And we are starting to get some a lot of multicultural area. It's not just Indigenous up here, but a lot of, African multicultural kids
that
love to play the game. So yeah, it's a very diverse sort of atmosphere up here. And look, obviously, I'd never been to Alice Springs before. I touched base here last year, so it was definitely a different kettle of fish for me, obviously spending 20 years working in Melbourne. So, yeah.
Absolutely. Well, what lured you to go there? What was the catalyst?
Look, obviously, I just had enough of COVID, mate, and I took a punt to go and to Perth to start with, obviously. And, Perth just didn't work out the way it was. And I was, this was just an opportunity to try and be a manager operator. And just take that other side of the tennis coaching game by chance and give it a go. So, probably the weather's been the greatest thing here. No washouts. We may get rain here on Wednesday, but
yep.
I think I've had one washout last year. So that's probably something we'll never see in Melbourne for a long time. So, yeah.
Yeah, blessed in that regard. And what about opportunities for the kids, Grant, to travel, to play in other states of Australia? Take us through what are the opportunities that are available to some kids there who have got showing some genuine promise.
Well, I suppose it's the hard thing, Brett, is that it's a financial thing to travel, and there's not necessarily a lot of opportunities because just financially people can't afford to go. The airfares and the accommodation, by the time that adds up, they're just not going. I mean, we struggle to get kids to want to go to Darwin and play. So there's definitely kids that might want to go, but it's just a financial thing, unfortunately, in the end. So,
yep. And when you're putting your coaching hat on, we've talked about a lot on this show about the standard of coaching across Australia. I think we certainly did a fair bit on it at the end of last year. There's been a coach review from TA and, I get lots of correspondence in. Either you're teaching at that real beginner level where you're getting a lot of kids through the door, or you're sort of teaching at that, performance level for those that might want to go on and possibly pursue a career.
I'm probably getting a lot of kids, just beginner kids through the door, I mean, we don't necessarily have kids that go on here. I think 15 is about the oldest we've got, and then we don't see them again. So it's hard. It's I think that's the hardest thing in the tennis coaching game, is how to keep those older kids playing, and even the better ones. I don't think I've seen that many good players up here. They're good kids,
yep,
but they don't train. You can't get them to train, and that's probably the frustrating thing as a coach, so yeah, if we could get them to want to play a bit more, then the enthusiasm would be to take kids away. So that's the main problem.
And what about the relationship with Tennis NT, the governing body up there, and the role they play in trying to foster the game?
They've been good in bits, I will say. That's the hard thing, being so far away. We are a club, probably 2.5 hours the other way of being South Australian tennis. So they've been good, and we probably need a little bit more support from them, but Yeah, it's a hard one. I just think that it's across the board that they're trying, but there's not. I think they have the same problem with personnel themselves. Maybe there's not enough people working for them at Tennis NT. You know, they don't have enough people working in their department to sort of make things better.
Grant, I know you're a listener to this show. UTR's obviously been a huge discussion. Does it impact you much in the Alison? What's your overall observation since it's been rolled out January 1? Because obviously it's gaining a lot of commentary. From what I, you know, certainly get to my email inbox, it's been a lot of negative feedback. I'm about to actually have a little discussion on the UTR side of things, but what have you made of it?
Oh, well, I think to me, I mean, look, we have two tournaments here that I ran for the first time last year, and
yep.
Obviously with COVID being still a little bit around everywhere, we got a couple of interstate guys from Queensland, but that was it, you know, and we got no kids from Darwin. I think it's to get for us kids here, there's no financial incentive, you know, from their perspective to come here and play when the same tournament could be advertised in their area as well. So it's, you know, we had a bronze and a silver, but, you know, we were lucky to get, 40 people for our tournament.
Yep.
So when you're only getting those numbers, you're asking yourself, well, how can that keep going? You know what I mean? So we're trying. Don't get me wrong. We are trying, but without support from around us to get people to come here, then, and at the same time, we're competing with states that have got the same tournaments on. So when that's happening, we're going to lose. They're going to go to that one. It's closer. It's cheaper.
Yep.
The UTR system. Well, to me, look, I'm just an added observer of looking at tournaments, and obviously, you know, from that perspective, when I sent you that picture today, and look, it's I don't think it's for tournaments. UTR should not be used as a rating system for tennis tournaments because not everybody wants it. You know, did we ask everybody? I mean, look, I've got a UTR doubles rating, and I wasn't asked whether I wanted to be using UTR.
Yep.
So I think, you know, I think that's from the perspective of the person that if, you know, I think Lawrence said the other day, you know, we had 6,000 people that had Australian rankings, and now we've got 80,000 UTR. So I said, did you ask those other 74,000 whether they wanted a UTR rating? So I think we're taking this the wrong way, and we should just be going, if people want an Australian ranking, we'll let them have an Australian ranking. If people want a rating, well, we already have a rating system in place, you know, especially in Victoria, and I know in WA they have a rating system as well because I played Pennant over there. So
yep.
Yeah, I think you have to separate it, you know. If you separate it and choose one for one and one for the other, then everybody would be happy. I mean, if we wanted to look at it at the moment, why, you know, we're implementing it, but has ATP and WTA implemented it yet? No.
No.
They're still using their ATP.
Yeah, exactly. And there's the World Tennis Number that's coming out, which the ITF are implementing. So, yeah, it's a fascinating space. I'm going to read out some correspondence shortly. Hey, just great to get some insights. Let's chat again. There's certainly, you know, challenges being where you are geographically. Great to go and have another coaching experience. You've had a long history in the game, and I think we'd love one day if Alice, who have produced, you know, some great sports people, particularly in AFL footy, if they could produce a tennis player, it'd be absolutely brilliant. But the most important thing, as we know, Grant, tennis is sport for life, and if kids can keep that racket in their hand a little longer and make it their vocation, just as good.
Yeah, I mean, I still play today, mate, and I love it, you know. So indeed. I coach, but I still play. So I see it as a long life sport. So, indeed. Yeah.
Good man. Hey, great to chat.
All right, cheers, mate. Talk to you soon.
Grant O'Callaghan joining us live from Alice Springs. Give us a little perspective in the Red Centre, head coach, tennis operator, and, of course, Grant is with us thanks to Yonex, 76 years of performance product crafted in Japan. Check out their latest range at yonex.com. We'll take a break, come back and discuss some UTR.
Let the sun pay for your electricity with a 6.6 kilowatt solar system from B Solar. Visit B.Solar and GLG Green Life Group, leaders in property services and open space management at glgcorp.com. The first serve. your home of tennis.
Quick update from Roland Garros. Casper Ruud, 4-2 against Hubert Hurkacz, looking for a spot in the quarterfinals. So we know Daria Kasatkina is through the first women's match today. The other women's match live at the moment. Looks like it's heading for a third set. Madison Keys took the first, 6-1 over Veronika Kudermetova, who's striking back 5-3 in the second. Just had a set point, which Keys has nullified. So we'll keep an eye on that and some great matches to come. UTR, it's been a topic of hot discussion on this show for a number of weeks. There's a lot of people with opinions all over Australia. Now, you'll notice if you're listening to the show last week, there were some questions sent in. There's been some others sent in by correspondence. I forwarded those to Tennis Australia for a response. So just to put some context around it, Brett got a question. This was in last week for Tennis Australia. Next time you get in contact, just wondering when they'll be able to fix many people's profiles online. I know many people like myself who have duplicate profiles or merge results that are incorrect. If they aren't willing to fix these problems as soon as possible, then the whole system simply falls apart. For example, my first round of Grade 1 pennant in Victoria, I played a person with two profiles, one that was a UTR of 10.5, the other 11.5, and both have results from the previous 2 years. Of course, my result was put against the lower account. So just the response I got back from Tennis Australia on that one. There are currently a large number of players with multiple profiles, and a user-friendly process to merge duplicate profiles is in work and is being designed. This will prevent the use of multiple profiles being created in the future, and also identify individuals by assigning players with a single tennis ID, which links directly to a player's UTR. This important work is nearing completion, and once in place, players will be able to merge any duplicate profiles and link their tennis ID and UTR. The end result will ensure a more streamlined and also an accurate process for identifying individual players and their rating, whilst providing event and competition organisers with improved tournament management capabilities. So that answers that one. There's another question that came in. Brett, in regard to UTR, when entering some UTR tournaments, players' names or UTR is not listed. If you need your child to play a certain player of certain level, you might draw a player with a much lower UTR. How do you know whether to enter your child in that UTR? So just talking about UTR visibility, Tennis Australia's response was, it's important to make the process for entering events as straightforward as possible, and work is being done to ensure a better experience for everyone involved. Work is also being done with Premier and Signature event hosts to ensure they communicate the necessary UTR and event information in a more timely manner. Now, I only read out a small section of Kirsten's email that she sent in last week, which was 4 pages. It was comprehensive. I forwarded all of that across to Tennis Australia. Members of our team did speak with Kirsten while they were in the ACT for the Nationals, and we've also written to her directly, responding to many of the points raised in her detailed note. There are a few small cases where anomalies in the rating may show up when comparing small data sizes, example 2 or 3 matches, and therefore at times there may be some adjustments both up and down to players' ratings if they have a period where they don't play. All players in Australia registered to TA can obtain their UTR at no charge. All affiliated clubs, venues and operators have access to tournament and competition software at no charge to run tournaments, leagues and competitions which capture players' results for the purposes of providing a rating. Ultimately, the choice to purchase UT products or UTR products or platforms rests with the player or the club. More information and education on UTR will be rolled out over the coming months. We are working with many groups throughout the tennis community and are seeking feedback to ensure we have the best competitive offerings for individual playing groups. In addition, TA have also gone on to say the competitive play framework was developed to support 2 streams of players that were identified during the competitive play review, the aspiring tennis player working to compete against the best in the world, and the competitive player who enjoys competing at club and association level. Although there's still a number of challenges to overcome, there are also many supportive of the new framework and how it is working successfully in their tennis communities. So that feedback has come back from TA. I continue to ask you for your feedback. You can always do it on this show every week by calling us, by texting us. If you prefer to send me a more detailed email, thefirstservesen@gmail.com. As I've stated for a number of weeks, we'll keep on this topic. It's important. Universal tennis rating being rolled out by TA as a rating and a ranking. It is unique. We've got the ITF rolling out the world tennis number. It's not been received, UTR, really, in the US, in terms of the USTA embracing it. So there's a lot of feedback, a lot of commentary around it. Now, I gleaned from that email that the TA, you know, certainly know there's a lot of things that need to be tidied up with it. What it's going to look like long-term, we'll have to wait and see. But your voice is strong on this out there, and it can be strong, and it can be via this program, through our link to Tennis Australia, to get both sides and to put all this on the agenda, because it is important to the growth of Australian tennis. Where are the next future Australian stars going to come from? Those who are, you know, going to go on and possibly have a career, or just to provide an easier pathway to actually stay in the sport and enjoy it from a domestic point of view. So it's been rolled out on the back of a performance review, but obviously there's some teething problems with it. I mean, there is some genuine anger out there. I mean, there's people who are just black and white that it should be scrapped. Others who think there's a good part of it down in the real junior ranks, but it shouldn't be applied to you know, the competitive playing tournament structure, as Grant O'Callaghan just alluded to. So happy to continue to receive your feedback on that. thefirstservesen@gmail.com if you want to certainly send me anything through during the week that can add to that particular conversation. Always great to have ASTI Tennis Courts on board. They are Melbourne's leading tennis court provider, of course. ASTE.com.au is where you need to head. They're trusted by Melbourne tennis clubs and councils, so make sure you certainly check them out. Casper Ruud, first set under his belt, 6-2. He's looking good, the Norwegian. Not many people are talking about him really as a title contender, but his body of work on clay the last 3 years has been outstanding. Winning a stack of titles, rising inside the top 10. He's just a professional. I think Todd Woodbridge hit it on the head when he came on Nine to start the coverage tonight about this generation of Ruud, Alcaraz, Rune, that generation before. And we've got to put, and I'm going to give him a really, really brief mention here, Kyrgios, Tomic, maybe throwing a Jack Sock, throwing a few others, a little too cool for school. This next generation, they've just got their head down, giving it everything. They can entertain at the same time through their pure skill out on the tennis court, and they don't need to be the class clown, so to speak. So these guys are great to watch. If you love watching high-level sport, whether it's tennis or any other sport, we just appreciate the skill and the artistry and the competitiveness of people willing themselves to be the best version. We love that. There's nothing wrong with that. And it's also entertainment. So we drew the short straw. But the rest of the world, I tell you what, there's some fine tennis talent that is going to be entertaining us for a long time. So the other matches to come, Rublev and Sinner, love that one a little bit later on. That could certainly go 5 sets. And Medvedev, I think, should beat Cilic a little bit later on tonight. I would suggest that one probably likely in straight sets in the night session. And we'll await to see the schedule for Djokovic and Nadal. It'll come over the next 3 to 4 hours. My strong hunch is I think they'll put that on at night, which maybe won't please Rafa, but does give Rafa a bit of extra recovery time, which he is going to need after the 5-setter against Felix Auger-Aliassime. Keep an eye on our website, thefirstserve.com.au, all our socials. If you want to track the Aussies every single day, because they are playing everywhere around the globe, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, whatever tickles your fancy, keep an eye on our website and have yourself a great week in tennis. Hit them out of the middle and just enjoy being part of the sport. We'll do it again next Monday. We'll wrap up the French Open and a whole lot more. Talk to you soon.